The Gap Between Rich and Poor, College Edition. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. A study out today finds U.S. universities and colleges brought in record charitable donations in the last accounting year, but the contributions are not spread evenly. They were clustered within a small, select group of schools. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is following this. Nancy, let me guess, which schools are getting all the money?
The most elite colleges and universities, of course. And David, this is according to a survey from the Council for Advancement and Support of Education. Harvard leads the list. It raked in almost $1.5 billion. Stanford and Columbia were right behind Harvard. In fact, according to the Wall Street Journal, 18% of all the donations last year went to less than 1% of U.S. colleges and universities, just 10 schools.
What's feeding donation inequality then?
Well, these donors get to decide where their money will go. Many times they went to these elite schools. But one of the survey's directors is quoted as saying that these top schools are multifaceted. They may have research facilities, hospitals, or even museums that people want to give money to. And let's face it, many of these donors like the idea of having their name on a hospital or museum wing.
But what about the other schools?
Well, community colleges are not top targets for these donors. They educate a much bigger slice of the population, though. Some of these donors are specifying that their money be used to help low-income students enroll in these elite universities. That's what Michael Bloomberg is doing with his $1.8 billion gift to Johns Hopkins University. But they're still just helping a small number of students.
Nancy, thank you. Now, remember the space race? Call it the AI race. Today, President Trump's expected to sign an executive order telling federal agencies to prioritize artificial intelligence research. Fellowships, apprenticeships, computer science education could be parts of this, with other countries, including China, working hard in this area. Congress would have to come up with the money. Let's check the markets. The 100-share index in London is up 0.5%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are each up about 0.3% each. Construction companies are set to keep hiring in 2019 amid still growing demand. That's according to a recent survey by the Associated General Contractors of America. But there are plans and then there's reality. That same study finds about 80% of those companies are having a hard time finding workers. From the Marketplace Hub at WCPN IdeaStream, Adrian Ma reports from Cleveland.
The temperature is below freezing at a construction site in downtown Cleveland, where workers from a company called Donley's are helping to build a new apartment tower. CEO Mac Donley knows that when the weather finally turns warm, there will be even more construction projects. So he has a team of full-time recruiters looking to hire for jobs like laborers, cement masons, and carpenters.
You need to stay in front of it at this point. You cannot be reactive or your competition's going to go right by you.
In this tight labor market, contractors around the country are paying more to attract skilled tradesmen and women. The average salary for a pipe welder has increased more than 10% since 2015. And for sheet metal workers, pay is up more than 18%. That's according to surveys by the nonprofit National Center for Construction Education and Research. Still, even if a company is willing to pay for the best, it often has to settle for what it can get.
And that's why the industry is spending much more now on training.
Ken Simonson is chief economist for the Associated General Contractors of America. He says companies are investing more in less experienced workers because
there is a growing backlog of demand for construction of both public buildings, private buildings, infrastructure, and apartments.
When deep demand meets a shallow labor pool, you have to get creative. Arthur Lindros heads the firm Bolton Pratt.
There were times last year where we hired carpenters from other companies to work on the weekends just to keep up with our workload.
He says he's even lured workers out of retirement to help finish a job. Not ideal, but an example of how personal connections can make a difference. On that score, Arian Kirkpatrick says she likes to send birthday cards to current and former employees of her company, AKA Team.
You wouldn't believe the response and how many people appreciate that. They're like, I've worked with the company for 10 years or 20 years. Nobody ever acknowledged me like that.
And when they need a job, she says hopefully they'll acknowledge her by signing up for work. In Cleveland, I'm Adrian Ma for Marketplace.
Now to lives saved by breast cancer screening and treatment. A peer-reviewed study of mortality data in the journal Cancer today finds that since 1989, between 300,000 and 500,000 lives were saved. But researchers say it's possible to do better, Marketplace's Jack Stewart reports.
Researchers pulled the numbers on breast cancer survival all the way back to 1989 to see the impact improved screening and treatment is having. Jay Baker is the chief of breast imaging at Duke University Medical Center. He's one of the co-authors of the report.
It's only now that we're really realizing that what seems like dry numbers really translates into an incredibly large population of women.
The figures show as many as 614,000 lives have been saved.
Screening mammography has also been shown to have other benefits beyond saving lives.
Because the earlier a cancer is caught, before it can spread or metastasize, the lower the need for aggressive and expensive treatments. But over a quarter of a million women still get breast cancer every year. Dr. Deborah Rhodes at the Mayo Clinic is working to develop more advanced imaging.
Most of the research now is focusing on treating metastatic disease, and I feel that that's putting the cart and the horse in the wrong order.
She says that with better screening, we still haven't reached the limits of how many lives can be saved. I'm Jack Stewart for Marketplace.
According to Russia's business news channel, that country is going to briefly unplug the internet in Russia sometime between now and the 1st of April. A Russian law requires authorities to be able to separate the internet in Russia from the rest of the world in case of cyber attack or other situations. This test would be to see if that works. The U.S. publication ZDNet, which spotted the Russian report, says the system is set up to allow Russian authorities to inspect all content to see if it's domestic. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.